So buy AFSCME Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws.
The high privilege and the distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Thank you all very much. Thanks for the warm welcome, man. Let's roll. One, two, three,
four.
Imagine, there's no heaven. It's easy. If you try, no hell. Below us, bus. And above us, only sky. Imagine all the people, living for today. Imagine there's no countries.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, a weekly program about working people, the labor movement, and organizing on KBOO Portland 90.7. I'm your host, Don McIntosh. Tonight's show is about reframing labor. In recent decades, unions have been most successfully defined by their adversaries. If unions are going to make a comeback, they'll have to improve their image in society and change how people think about them. In just a moment, Professor George Lakoff will join us by phone from the University of California at Berkeley. Professor Lakoff, a leading thinker in the field of sociolinguistics, is probably best known for his 2004 political bestseller, Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. He's also author of Moral Politics, What Conservatives Know That Liberals Don't. In his books, Lakoff offers an explanation of conservative success and a prescription for progressive comeback. Conservatives know their values and are successfully framing the debate. Progressives will need to respond not by disagreeing with conservative frames, but by articulating their own. In the second half of the hour, we'll talk with two Oregon educators who have been applying Professor Lakoff's ideas to a union context, training union leaders in the concept of framing and challenging them to articulate the values that motivate them. Labor educator Greg Schneider, a retired AFSCME staff director, joins us in the KBOO studio. And University of Oregon professor Bob Bussell, director of the Labor Education and Research Center, will join us by phone from Eugene. Greg, Bob, welcome.
Nice to be here, Don.
Greg and Bob will be listening during the first half hour, and I invite them to jump in with a comment or question if they feel the need. We'll also be taking your calls in the second half of the hour. We'll announce the number to call later. And now I'd like to welcome George Lakoff in Berkeley. Welcome to Labor Radio.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Let's start. Maybe I chose that intro track for a reason. It's George Bush singing John Lennon's Imagine. And although it's a little bit scary and preposterous, you can almost imagine him singing Imagine, because conservatives talk about values.
That's right. Conservatives not only talk about values, but they win elections on them. This is something that Richard Werthlin learned. Werthlin was Ronald Reagan's chief strategist when Reagan ran in 1980 and 84. And I met Werthlin recently, and he told me something I'd sort of guessed, but with much more detail. When he went to work for Reagan, he had been a pollster and had believed that people voted for candidates on the basis of their policies. And what he discovered when he started polling for Reagan is that nobody liked Reagan's policies. They just liked Reagan and wanted to vote for him. So the question he asked was why. And he got basically an answer with four parts. They identified with Reagan. Why? Because they thought he was authentic. They trusted him. And he talked about values rather than programs and policies. And they liked his values. So, he decided to run on the basis of identification, values, trust, and authenticity, and won. And that's also been followed by Bush running using the same tactics with his base.
This is one of the insights of your book, certainly, that Americans vote on the basis of values or their identity, not on the basis of necessarily self-interest or policies.
That's right.
One of the concepts, too, that you bring from your background in sociolinguistics or linguistics is this idea of frames, and I guess it has to do with metaphors. You know, for our audience, how would you explain what frames mean?
Well, every word is defined relative to a frame, even the simplest word. Take a word like bottle. Bottle has a very simple meaning. It's a simple frame. It is a container. It usually contains liquids. It has something you can grasp with your hand and put up to your mouth and drink out of, usually, or pour things out of or into. And that's it. That's all you know about bottles. And it's a very simple frame. But to understand the word bottle, to understand something like, there's a bottle of water on the table, you have to know that. So there's nothing, deep about framing in that regard. The thing that's deep is that the conceptual frame, the structure of the concept of bottle, is in your brain if you've learned the word bottle. So if you know what it means, then that meaning is in your brain. Now, the way that language works on the right is by repetition. That is, they will repeat ideas and words that evoke those ideas over and over and over. The example I used in the last book was tax relief, where when Bush came in the office, he said, use tax relief, and said it over and over and over again. The word relief says there's an affliction and an afflicted party, a hero who takes the affliction away, and if anybody stops them, they're a villain.
Right, who wouldn't want relief?
Who wouldn't want relief, and it's bad to stop relief, and you add that tax to that, and you get taxation as an affliction. You repeat it over and over again, and it becomes common sense, part of your brain. And that is how the right wing over the past 35 years has essentially shaped the debate over just about every issue. Take something like immigration, where if you say that there's an immigration issue, it says the issue has to do with immigrants, not, say, with the notion of cheap labor. Or with other economic forces in the country. It says if you define this in terms of illegals, that says that the people involved are bad people. They're felons because they've committed an illegal act. They're defined by the illegality of it, and therefore should be made criminals and seen as criminals. So as soon as you use that language, what you wind up doing is framing people in a certain way in which you can then pass a law that treats, let's call them disenfranchised workers as criminals. If you called them disenfranchised workers, that would mean that the people who are doing work in the country they would be the people who didn't have votes, who didn't have rights as citizens for whatever reason.
Right, because you'd want to enfranchise them naturally.
Yeah.
So for each issue or policy area, then, the conservatives have, with their apparatus, the think tanks and the sort of transmission belt that you see in the sort of conservative policy wonks that populate the media sphere, they've managed to succeed in getting their frames to be the first that come to mind. And framing, again, for example, being just basic conceptual item, when you said bottle, for example, I thought of a bottle. There's, of course, a lesson in the title of your book, Don't Think of an Elephant. So what happens when you say don't think of an elephant?
Well, what happens is you think of an elephant. Just like when Nixon said, I am not a crook, everybody thought of him as a crook. If you try to argue against somebody's position using their words and their language and their framing, you just reinforce the framing because people have to think in terms of the issue as they frame it. So, if someone says, are you for or against tax relief? It doesn't matter if you're for or against. Taxation is still an affliction.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to Labor Radio. We're talking with UC Berkeley professor George Lakoff about knowing your values and framing the debate. Professor Lakoff, how is framing different than spin or propaganda, or for that matter, marketing?
Well, framing is, of course, used in ordinary everyday language and in propaganda, spin, and so on. In the case of spin, there is something that's very embarrassing that has happened, and you're trying to frame the situation to avoid the embarrassment. In the case of propaganda, you're trying to use framing to get people to believe things that are false but politically advantageous for you. But framing, as I'm talking about it, is getting across your deepest beliefs, what you really believe, what you really care about, and doing it effectively and not accepting the framing of the other side.
You know, of course, the subject of this show is organized labor and working people. I know that, you know, you have been invited to speak with a number of labor organizations and sort of have a message for them. But, you know, first I want to ask, you know, what do you think of when you hear the word union? What images come to mind?
Well, when I hear the word union, many things come to mind. First, the fact that labor has been seen as a resource, you know, in the economy and in the way companies think about workers, to be sort of, you know, bought and sold like any other resource, like oil or coal or iron. And when you think of labor as a resource, what you're trying to do is to get it as cheaply as possible and to maximize your profits and minimize your costs of labor. In general, corporations divide their employees into two classes, assets and resources. And the assets are very, very different. They're the senior management and creative people who, you know, are seen as a value to the company. And the resources are usually interchangeable, and the idea is to get them as cheaply as possible and not to really care about them. They're fungible. They're not seen as people. They're seen as things. You know, they're hired by the human resources department. And what unions have done is to say, first of all, they're people. Secondly, not only are they people, but a company has great power to bargain with individuals. But if you corner the market on the resource, suppose you take, say, their resources, if you corner the market on the resources, then you can jack up the cost price of the resources. It's just supply and demand. So one thing that unions have done is say, okay, you want to call them resources, let's take that and, you know, find a way to corner the market on it and give people decent wages and benefits as a result. It's a funny kind of thing because they're using the company's metaphors to fight against the company's values. So that's always a tricky issue in these matters. So that's one part of it. The other thing I think about in terms of unions is what life was like before them. My mother went to work out of the eighth grade in a factory. She worked in a factory for 25 years, you know, 6 days a week, 12 hours a day for $3 a week. That's what it was like for her before unions. The idea of a 5-day week and an 8-hour day did not exist before unions. Unions not only made decent wages and benefits possible, they changed the way we think about our lives and our working lives. That's, for me, a remarkable thing. Unions have changed the way we live, and most people don't know that. Most people have no idea just how much we owe to unions.
So what I'm hearing from you then is what you think of when you think of union. You know, partly it's this concept of workers banding together to bargain a better deal, you know, for their labor. Partly maybe it's sort of a historical gratitude for the role that unions played, for example, in helping your mother, you know, kind of a family loyalty almost in your case. And yet I feel like in the society, unions have acquired not as good a name, that they have been sort of successfully defined by the anti-union business type.
That's right. What's happened is that the unions have not put forth their role, their social role. Unions ought to be major forces in the communities in which they operate. They have made enormous contributions. Most people, as I say, don't know that the 5-day week, the 8-hour day, the paid vacations, and benefits have come from unions. And there's another part of it that the unions have tried to portray themselves as simply tough guys, you know, who are fighting against the other guys. They haven't portrayed themselves as representing the values of communities. And I think that's been a big part of, you know, the why unions have been defeated in the country. A lot of people do not identify with unions, not only because they don't have
to
know the facts.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM,
but because
and
unions
this is
have
Blue
not,
Monday.
Not a very useful thing. And then unions are seen as threatening the country, threatening a strike, rather than... you know, standing up for democratic rights.
It's spoken of as union demands and management offers.
Right.
And which is more reasonable, the demander or the offerer?
Right, exactly. Not only that, they've allowed the companies to get away with the metaphor of employment. Employment means they're giving jobs away rather than workers giving profits to, you know, to the employers.
Right, employee is sort of passive. It's the person that employment is done to.
Right, exactly.
Worker is active.
Right. Not only
linguistically speaking.
Not only workers are active, but they're not seen as profit makers. You know, they're not seen as the people who are, you know, the centers of productivity.
So the question is workers the folks who do the work, the folks who society owes allegiance to, or is it the employers, people who give the jobs?
See, it's the people who give the jobs, you know, to these, you know, poor benighted folks who need the jobs, rather than the workers who give the profits through their work otherwise. And then there's an issue of productivity. Most people don't know, for example, that since Bush became president, corporate profits have doubled, but wages have stayed the same. That means that as productivity has gone up, the people who have been more productive, the workers, have not been paid for that increase in productivity. I mean, this is something that just isn't mentioned. People in unions don't frame things this way. They don't get those ideas out in public. And then there are other ideas that are very important. Right now, about a quarter of our workforce is in what I'll call a cheap labor trap. These are the people who can't afford health care. And they work hard, and they're, you know, very often not, most often not in unions. They uphold the lifestyles of the top three quarters of the country, but they're not paid very much. And the idea that they can all pull themselves up by their bootstraps is false. I mean, where would they all go? 45 million people, you know? And not only that, you know, who would do the jobs at that price that they're doing? The result is that the people who are working the hardest, being paid the least, upholding the lifestyles of the top three quarters of the country, have no gratitude from the top three quarters of the country. You know, those people should be unionized. Unions give people dignity. And they're not seen as engines of dignity. You know, that's what they really are. They give people dignity, and they insist that, you know, people be paid fairly for upholding other people's lifestyles. I mean, this is a very crucial thing. You know, unions have never talked about, or appropriately framed their crucial role in society.
Right, so your message then, in part, to the union movement is that, you know, first of all, don't accept the frames of those who, you know, that don't work for you, the frames imposed on you by maybe employers. Secondly, maybe articulate your own frames, talk about your values, and I know that, you know, perhaps thirdly, you know, you have said that, you know, labor can't go it alone, that they have to see themselves as part of a community, maybe a broader progressive movement, and I know that that's something that sometimes they've been reluctant to do.
Right. See, most people in labor don't see themselves as part of an environmental movement, but they should. I mean, not just see, instead of thinking of their own self-interest, you know, for a particular union membership, they should talk about the interests of society. They should be the people representing the common good in this country, and you know, whether or not it's in the narrow self-interest of a particular group of workers in a particular factory, or you know, in a particular union, the idea is that you know, people who work, you know, for a living should be able not only to earn a living, but live in a country where they can breathe clean air, where they can have health care, where they can get educations, where they can have public health, you know, so they don't get diseases and so on. I mean, there's unions should be representing the common good in this country, and they don't see themselves as having those broader goals.
Once again, you're listening to Labor Radio, a weekly program about working people and the labor movement on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also 91.9 in Hood River and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley. I'm your host, Don McIntosh. We're talking with UC Berkeley professor George Lakoff about how to reframe labor. You know, I wonder if, you know, there's a question about whether you can change the language without changing the substance that underlies it. I mean, to some extent, the stereotypes about labor, you look into it and maybe you find it's true. For example, this idea of labor as a special interest. Well, you know, there are in plenty of cases, you know, you may talk to individual union folks and their only concern is, you know, the wages and the work conditions of their members.
Exactly. The general message is you cannot change the language without changing the broader values. Language depends upon what I call deep frames, and deep frames have to do with values and ideas and general principles. And it's exactly that that's missing right now from the union movement.
And I wonder if, you know, which will need to come first, whether they'll need to re-engage in the community, whether they'll need to change their approach, or whether maybe getting in touch with their values will force them to re-engage.
Well, I think all of those need to be done at once. There are union leaders who do understand this and are trying to change the union movement. And, you know, if they don't change, they're going to be, you know, killed off by the conservatives.
Well, speaking of which, you know, I think one of the dominant, you know, metaphoric images you associate with labor is, you know, the dinosaur. And so I'm thinking that, you know, maybe there's this group of, you know, older white guys with mustaches standing around with a picket sign saying, you know, no, we're not dinosaurs. Really, really, we're not. And that's responding to the frame of course, you know, the dinosaur, this idea that labor is maybe a big, you know, bad thing in its day, but now it's sort of a fossil or, you know, on its way to being one.
Well, the way not to be that is to broaden their scope, to live their values, and to make common cause with, you know, people who are progressives in a wider sense.
You know, I don't know if this is fair or unfair. You probably heard it before, but you know, there has been the criticism out there of your approach that somehow maybe it's putting pearls on a pig, or that, you know, what the progressives lack, what, you know, is authenticity, and that, you know, to think, you know, word by word and get down to, you know, these frames, maybe that's something premeditated.
Well, not at all. What I'm actually proposing, those are the people who have not read the books. The people who have read the books.
But you have heard that.
Yeah, I've heard it from people who haven't read them. Basically, and for certain very interesting reasons. You know, what I've actually proposed is people, you know, rethinking progressive values from the deepest sense. Progressive thought comes from the idea of empathy and responsibility for both yourself and others. That is, caring about people and being responsible for yourself, being responsible for others. And from that comes notions like protection, you know, whether worker protection or consumer protection or safety nets, whatever, and also notions like freedom, fairness, equality, and so on, and openness and honesty and trust in communities. I mean, these are crucial values that come out of very simple progressive ideas, and the labor community.
I do want to strongly recommend your book to listeners. It's a measly $10, quite a deal, and it's available, for example, at Powell's, a union bookstore here in Portland. They've got like 10 or 20 copies on hand at all times. It's quite a good selling and a quick read. Again, the book is called Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. For those folks who are complete cheapskates, or maybe just to give you them more of a taste of it, you know, you got your start looking at the values that seemed to unify conservatives. It was sort of a thought process that you had where you were wondering, well, what could possibly unify this sort of issues coalition that they've managed to put together? I mean, what do you see as the thing that unifies conservative thinking?
Well, when you ask the question, why should the same people who are against abortion be for the flat tax, or against environmental regulations, or for tort reform, and what do they have to do with each other? The answer comes out of their notion of family values. We have a general metaphor in the country of the nation as a family. We have founding fathers. We send our sons and daughters to war. And there turns out to be two utterly different understandings of what an ideal family is like. The one that is behind conservatism, the one that, let's say, James Dobson on Focus on the Family teaches to tens of million people around the country, is what I'll call a strict father family. And that says that in a strict father family, you have an authoritarian father who protects the family against evil in the world, who has to win competitions where there will always be winners and losers, where kids are born bad in the sense they do just what they want to do and they need to be taught right from wrong, and he knows right from wrong. The only way to do that is punishment, painful punishment. But liberals don't understand that. They think they have to move to the right.
Thanks for joining us. Once again, you're listening to Labor Radio, a weekly program about working people and the labor movement on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. We've been talking with George Lakoff, author of Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. Now we'll talk about George Lakoff, or his ideas at least, and how to apply them in a locally in a union context. With us in the KBOO studio, we have labor educator Greg Schneider, a retired AFSCME staff director. Greg started as a meat packer in South Dakota, then went to work for the United Food and Commercial Workers, the United Electrical Workers, Service Employees International Union, and finally ended up at AFSCME, which is American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as staff director. Welcome again, Greg.
Thanks, Don.
Also joining us by phone from Eugene is University and Research Center. Bob used to work for Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union, which is now part of Unite. He directed organizing campaigns in the mid-Atlantic states, and he spent a year as a union rep for SEIU in a healthcare local in Massachusetts. Bob Bussell holds a master's degree in labor education from Rutgers University and a PhD in history from Cornell University. Bob, you're still with us.
Yes, I am, Don.
Thanks for sticking around.
Sure.
Greg, Bob, I want to start with anything you disagreed with in this last half hour that George Lakoff had to say. I'm hearing no.
Well, I wouldn't say disagree. I mean, the one thing, and it was, it was a little hard for me to hear, actually. I did want to chime in at a couple of points, but I was having trouble picking him up on the line. But I do think that there are some positive instances where labor's been pretty successful in framing, and the whole Walmart campaign most recently, I think, has been a real labor success. And I think certainly some of the things that unions have been doing around immigrant workers and in organizing campaigns, there really has been, I think, a concerted and skillful attempt in certain cases to really portray unions as a social justice movement. So I would factor that in a little bit more. I don't think it's quite as pessimistic as it appeared to come off during the your interview with Professor Lakoff.
And I don't mean to overstate the case. I mean, I do think that there are signs of life, there are signs of movement in the labor movement, but, you know, there's also, you know, I think tremendously out there, there are unions that are still operating really as they did, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. And this metaphor of a dinosaur keeps coming up. I mean, even I think, you know, Professor Lakoff, who might certainly greatly admire and have for years, I mean, one of his images of labor was this thing that helped win, you know, improvements for his mother. And certainly that's the case. I mean, union, you know, they say they, you know, the folks that brought the weekend. Well, the problem is they lost it too, or we all lost the weekend. We lost the 40-hour week. I mean, not entirely, but you know, those are under attack now. And I think it's not enough to sort of say what has labor done for you in the past, but what has labor done for you recently? You know, what have you done in labor for yourself and collectively recently?
And we've been loving off our past for way too long. I think that's absolutely fair, and I think what's exciting about Lakoff's thinking is it provides us with some tools and some avenues in which to really portray ourselves in you know, more fresh and vibrant ways.
And you guys have been now sort of applying this in workshops in the last year or so, talking with union people, stewards, labor leaders, about how to frame, how to reframe, how to think about themselves, how to identify their values.
Take it, Greg.
Yeah, that's true, we have. It's been really exciting. We've been working mostly with rank-and-file leaders, but some staff as well. And when you get an opportunity to talk to union people and have them focus on their values, why they really began this work, You can just see them light up, and you can see the wheels turning.
You know, I went into, if you'll indulge me, I have a definition of union that I crafted based on, you know, I myself work at a labor union newspaper and have for 7 years now. You know, and I certainly, immersed in the labor movement, but also sort of as an independent observer. This is my definition of union, and some of it's a little bit negative, but I think what I'm trying to get at is what people think and the problems that unions have to overcome if they're going to get anywhere. So, definition of unions. One. A special interest group advocating on behalf of low status.
Will find their grounding in that kind of feeling and that kind of emotion, the basis for moving forward. They get excited. We need to find a way to connect the general public and even our members with that feeling.
Yeah, let me give you an example, Don, from a class Greg and I did recently in terms of how this works. This was with a union in the building trades, and we were trying to get people to talk about a moment in the union movement that they felt the best about and why they felt the best about it in terms of values. And Greg, I'm sure, remembers this. And when you get people to that point, and it is a bit of a struggle because we're not accustomed to talking this way. In some ways, we're abashed and embarrassed about it. But once you get people to that point, as Greg said, that's the way, really, to start to counter that image. All the images, which, you know, quite correctly, as you pointed out, are all too pervasive in our culture.
You know, this is something I had hoped you guys could share, too, is you guys talk with and sort of force, in this case, force someone to talk about their values. You get kind of a nice list, which maybe you just articulated, but, I mean, what do folks in your workshops identify as the values that that they associate with unions and why maybe they get involved in the first place? And, you know, and yet maybe the union leaders also aren't articulating this.
I think that's really important, that union leaders
have to understand, they have to promote the idea that it is a democratic process, that members are entitled and are needed to participate in that process.
Yeah, Bob, did you want to also add something?
Oh, just to say that, you know, too often in bargaining, we don't really depict what we're doing as, it's done more and more, I think, but the idea that this is really about, you know, about community values, about upholding community standards, you know, that in contrast to the race to the bottom frame, more and more unions are thinking creatively in terms of how they portray bargaining or they portray organizing or even how they portray union participation in politics and trying to get the one problem, Don, and we've talked about this a number of times before, is I think that as a movement, we are very insular and parochial. Too often, we're much more comfortable engaging in what Greg and I have come to call union speak. We speak this pretty arcane language that may mean something to a small coterie of folks in the union movement, but it doesn't mean all that much to people outside our circles. I think one of the most important things we can do is to really think about how we communicate with people outside the choir. And when you start to do that and you bring values in, then I think you really are onto something.
You're absolutely right, Bob. That's exactly what we need to do.
And the exciting part is, as we do it, you know, with folks, again, I have to say, I mean, I've been in this business for quite a while, as has Greg, and I think we would both agree that this has been one of the most exciting types of programs and classes we've done, because I think it's, pardon the term, but it is kind of shifting people to a new paradigm, in a way, or a new way of really thinking about how they not only communicate, but how they do their work, and what type of institution and what type of union culture they want to create.
I'd like to take the opportunity.
You know, liberal Democratic candidates, they talk in terms of these lengthy policy proposals. I have a plan, a 10-point plan to do this. I'll do 61% of the funding towards education and et cetera. And people's eyes just glaze over and they don't trust it, you know. And meanwhile, the conservatives might be talking about values which they're violating daily in their policies. And
absolutely,
yet people say, well, I support those values. I'm going to vote for that guy. So I think that, you know, really what's inspiring to me then is to hear maybe some liberals, some progressives out there articulating their values in a way that just really can touch everybody, because everyone has those same values. You might have inside you might be stingy on one day and generous on another. You can identify with both of those sort of attitudes, and so I think that the task maybe of leaders, of activists, persuaders, is to engage those values.
Well, you know, I remember in the fact of September 11th and who the folks were that ran into those buildings. I mean, so many of them, you know, were wearing union insignias. They were union members, and they, you know, the values that they embodied. I mean, you know, Lakoff talked about patriotism, talked about, I remember actually writing an op-ed about this somewhat after September 11th when they were busting, you know, doing union busting at the Department of Homeland Security. You know, it was just, it's amazing what union people bring to the table, yet again we are reluctant or not. You often just get so wrapped up in, you know, the union advantage, you know, that whole notion where, you know, if you're in a union you get paid, you know, much better than qualify.
Yeah, and the facts and statistics really don't help us when the public has an image of us as heavy-handed, self-interested. It's all about the money for us, and that's something we have to overcome.
Right, I think that, and this is a point Lakoff makes as well, you know, that you know, people, you know, again, voters vote identity and values, not self-interest necessarily, which is why, of course, you see so many that where the unions are more likely to be persuasive, talking about dignity in the workplace, about not being, you know, pissed on, for example, by your employer, the idea that you can speak your mind or you have freedom, you have a voice at work, you know, maybe, you know, that you have that kind of dignity that comes from negotiating together and having a group of people that protects you.
Well, I'll tell you something else in this regard, too. It's interesting. Actually, I first encountered George Lakoff on Bill Moyers' show Now that was on PBS. Well, still is, but with a different host. And there's also his Frank Luntz, you know, is a major Republican pollster who really helps Republicans frame issues. It was interesting because when Luntz was on Moyers, and this was, I think, not too long after the 2004 election, Luntz said, you know, in the focus groups I run, one of the things I hear the most from folks about is how do you balance the demands of work versus the demands of family? That's such a potent area that Luntz, this is a conservative pollster, is finding out about. I don't think anyone in either party has really addressed this that closely, either political party. And the union movement, too, I think, is missing out on a golden opportunity in terms of values. I mean, we do some stuff around family leave and, you know, concern about children, but not nearly enough. And it really is, I think, political dynamite if we can figure out a way, but you have to go after it consistently. That's the other part of Lakoff's message. It's not just a few glib words or sound bites that you do here or there. It really is something that you have to do consistently, constantly, and get a larger buy-in from your members, and you take that message out into the broader community. Then again, I think we really are onto something.
In case you just joined us, you're listening to Labor Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation in the few remaining minutes we have with a question or comment, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Greg, I know you wanted to respond.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that point. There are no magic words. There are no magic bullets. You have to find a message that resonates, that creates something that touches the very core values in somebody's heart in order to reach them. And then you repeat it, and you repeat it, and you repeat it. You need to own the language of the debate. You can't let them run with it. You can't let them define you.
I know this is something that I've, talked with George Lakoff in the past, and, you know, he and his institute, I guess, are constantly besieged with requests from progressives. You know, give us the words, tell us what to say, put things in our mouths. And, of course, his reaction is to reject that and say, no, you have to get back to talking about your values. And I think it's an interesting kind of contrast maybe between Frank Luntz and George Lakoff. I mean, some people on the left want to see Lakoff as this guru along the lines of Luntz. But I think the difference to some extent is Luntz is about messaging. It's about getting messages that work, whether or not they necessarily violate your values or not. And so, for example, they're gonna focus group and pull test the words that they use, even when those words might be diametrically opposed to the policies they describe, like the Clean Air, Clean Skies Act, or these kinds of things. Conservatives have become very good in recent years at these kind of Orwellian, word choices, when in reality it has very little to do with the policies that they describe.
No, that's absolutely right, Don. And I think one of the key operating words here is authenticity. I mean, if you do change your language, you are talking in different terms. If you're not really authentic about it, you're not only talking the talk, you have to be walking the walk on this. You won't really be taken seriously. And I do have to say this, I think in many cases, I mean, conservative voters, including union, you know, some segment of the union population.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think you're absolutely on the mark. I heard Lakoff saying the unions need to do a little soul searching and get back to the values that made us grow in the first place, that make us valuable to the rest of the community. And we need to live those values as well as speak them.
Again, if you'd like to join our conversation with a question or comment, the number to call is 503-231-8187. I understand we're joined by Mark from Southwest Portland. Welcome to Labor Radio.
Thanks very much. Thanks for taking my call and for a sparkling program. I just wanted to emphasize a few points that we ought to rejoice that the anti-globalization, the anti-WTO movement, is growing and actually winning. That very often CEOs are stylized as job creators, and workers are dismissed as cost factors. I think we need to warn one another against competition as a panacea or a false security. If everyone becomes more competitive, then all the countries are caught in mass unemployment. Germany, under the phrase location competition, is really resigning to mass unemployment. I mean, it's a dreadful disorder, and to me, it just points to the great need for economic democracy and for focusing on investments, on real investments, not functionless, speculative kinds of investments.
Yeah, Mark, I want to thank you for your call and maybe comment on a couple of things you raised. I think you're absolutely right that globalization has been very successfully framed now in the last few years by progressives, and starting with majorly with Seattle WTO demonstrations. Nobody ever heard of caller economic democracy. I mean, I think what might be one way to frame unions as being economic democracy, the idea that you get to, in fact, vote on your union contract. You get to vote on whether to accept, this wage or that benefit and so forth. That's what unions, in fact, do in this country.
It is indeed. It's a really nice concept. I just wanted to say I had the pleasure, the privilege of being up there in Seattle when that happened a few years ago. The feeling, the spirit of that was beautiful. Unfortunately, I think they got an opportunity to reframe us as anarchists, as violent, and it took quite a bit to pull that back. I sure hope Mark's right and that we are winning that battle.
I want to really thank you for this program. Lykoff brings up something that I've just been trying me for years, and that we need to gain the polemical high ground, and we need to attach our values and speak about our values more. And I don't know, this is one thing that unions don't do well, and we as progressives don't do well. But what also been frustrating me for a long time is that this idea that going towards the middle, and the Republicans do not go to the middle. They stake out their ground, they state their values, and they stick to their values. And can you, maybe somebody there can rephrase what he said about you don't go to the middle, you state your values in terms that they understand? Is that how it went?
Yes. Yeah, that's basically it.
And that's what we need to do, whether it's in our union or in our political parties or what, that we need to do that more often. And the parties don't do it, but union members need to get more involved in their union and in the parties more.
Well, thank you.
This is really a good show.
I just want to say, one thing, too, I think, is that in the political process itself, when unions are endorsing candidates, interviewing them, there's a chance to influence candidate behavior, and I think part of it is, it's not that you can necessarily tag the endorsement. You have to speak in terms of our values. But, again, I think it speaks to the argument that in every instance, whether it's, candidates coming to you for endorsement, when you're speaking in the community, you're on a board in the community, you're in bargaining, that you're leading with your values in every instance. And people do start to come around when they see there's a consistency and a steadfastness. And it's just hard for people to argue when, you're talking about justice, you're talking about democracy, you're talking about protection, you're talking about fairness. You really do seize the moral high ground. You frame things in moral terms that most people, I think, can really identify with and associate with. And that puts us on a different path as far as, I think, relevance and social appeal.
Yeah, I don't think the advice was to head to the middle at all. It was that people share those values. They have both sets of values operating at the same time, and you have to find a way to motivate them to act on the set of values that we as union people would support and set the example for.
Again, I want to thank Paul for the call. I understand we have Don also from North Portland waiting. Don, you're with us.
Yes.
Welcome to Labor Radio.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I was a one of the former custodians at Portland Public Schools. I don't know if you're familiar with that whole issue.
Sure, we've had it on the show a number of times.
Right. Well, my question is, and I'm also a member of SEIU, why would a sister union walk across their own union members' picket line and take their jobs, representing the contractor for slave wages and no benefits? I need to know. I need an answer to that question.
Okay, I can answer it quickly. It really doesn't have much to do with Lakoff and reframing, I think. But my understanding is that SEIU, Local 49, along with 503, provide a lot of valuable assistance, strategic assistance, staff time, and so forth, to help SEIU Local 140, which represented the school custodians, fight privatization. Because SEIU's position, you know, may disagree or agree with it on any number of issues, but their position is against privatization. They know that, that you're better off having a public employer that's generally going to be a little bit have less incentive to screw the employees, generally going to have hopefully a little bit more decent wages and working conditions, in as much as their leaders are elected and are accountable to the people. So I mean, that's just my response is I think that's really I report on it very in depth, and I don't think that's the case at all.
I disagree.
It's not really related to
no. I disagree with that.
We've got. Okay, well, listen, we've got just a minute or two left in the show. I wanted to invite Greg and Bob to talk. Also, I understand that you guys are collaborating with the Rock Ridge Institute to some extent, talking about that progressive manual, the labor part of it. Have you had conversations with them?
We have had the opportunity to talk with some of their staff about where they're going and where our program might fit into that. I'm very excited about the opportunity.
Yeah, we've done this, I guess, about three or four times now, both in open enrollment settings and for particular unions, and we have more requests starting to come in, and we're really going to be going out and publicizing more what this is. And again, it's a work in progress. We are still, learning from people as we work collaboratively on thinking about this. We don't have, a canned program or a set of answers, but I think, inspired by Lakoff, we are raising the right questions, and of course the proof will be people going back, practicing this stuff, finding out what works and what doesn't work, and then coming back together and continuing to rethink this. But I think there's enormous potential here, and just the way people have responded to it, I think tells us that we have, we're on the right track.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. We're able to get in touch with many of the values working with the folks that come to our classes that we work with. The real test is going to be when it comes to the day-to-day grind, do they take it back with them and use it, or do we fall back in the trap of talking union to each other?
Greg Schneider, Bob Bussell, I want to thank you for joining us this evening on Labor Radio.
Sure. It's a pleasure, Don.
It's been a pleasure to have
you here.
Just have one announcement to make. Of course, next Monday is May Day. In addition to being International Workers' Day, it's also being billed as a day without immigrants. Some immigrants' rights groups are calling for a general strike and boycott by immigrant workers. Immigrant workers are asked to take the day off if possible and attend a local event. For example, in Portland, there's a gathering in the South Park blocks in downtown Portland from 10 to noon. And then at noon, they'll be marching, I think, till roughly 2 o'clock. Also in Salem, the Farm Workers Union PICUN is organizing a march at the state capitol at 1 p.m. That's about all the time we've got. I want to thank you for listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I'm Don McIntosh. I'd like to thank our engineer, Ben Levine, and our guests, George Lakoff, Greg Schneider, and Bob Bussell. We hope you'll tune in again next Monday at 6 p.m. for Labor Radio. Of course, it's our May Day edition, and host Bill Zimmerman will be talking about the immigrants' rights boycott general strike and putting it in the context of past cases where workers of the world united. Stay tuned for Time Sound, a program of soul music with host Kevin Berry.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU. whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. And also by AFSCME Local 3336, representing the employees of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality by advocating for working conditions, pay and benefits, supporting political activity that promotes pro-environment and pro-labor positions, strengthening labor coalitions, and actively organizing members. More information at AFSCME3336.org.